everyone. Welcome to another episode of Reviving Vet Med. In this episode, we are going to be talking about substance use disorder. This is a really heavy topic, but it's one that really warrants discussion. And I will be honest in saying that I was exposed to substance use in the profession quite a long time ago. It was years ago when I was working in my mom's general practice, and I remember that we had one of our clients who was coming in more and more often to have her prescription refilled for her cat's diazepam. And it got to the point where one of the doctors had to have a conversation with her and basically tell her that we weren't able to refill the prescription anymore. I mean, she had made all sorts of excuses. She lost it, she flushed it down the toilet, she, you know, accidentally left it somewhere, whatever it might be. And ultimately we came to the realization that she was likely using it herself. So that was my first exposure to substance use in our profession. And the most recent time that I have been involved or, adjacent to a person with substance use disorder is actually at a practice that I occasionally locum at, where I was working with a technician who was actually diverting opioids for personal use. And this was something that was going on for quite some time before the practice was able to recognize it. Believe it or not, they had actually had several patients in the hospital who were struggling to manage their pain, and they were like, what's happening? We've got these dogs on, you know, multiple constant rate infusions when normally we've been able to manage with intermittent, you know, boluses of opioid. And they finally sent the drug to the manufacturer for testing because they were like, something is going on with this new batch of drugs that we have. And they discovered that the drugs had been diluted or replaced with saline, and that drug diversion was happening. And they were finally able to determine who was diverting, and sadly that individual was using the substance themselves. So a really sad situation, and based on what we know about the link between substance use and suicide, I do think that this is a really important topic for us to discuss. So in today's episode, we are going to be talking about how do we recognize when an individual potentially has a substance use disorder, and how do we help. And I'll be sharing some different resources. Those will all be available in the show notes as well. And I hope you take something away from this episode. And if not for you, then for someone else in your life, please do feel welcome to share it. So please note, as you listen to this episode, it was previously recorded using live video. Therefore, some of the audio may not be of the super high quality that you would hear with other podcasts. And with that, I am really looking forward to sharing this information with you. It's not an easy conversation, but it is an important one. So let's get into the episode. This is the Reviving Vet Med Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Marie Holloway-Chuck. My mission is to improve the mental health and well-being of veterinary professionals around the world. So this is a meme that I think that many of you have probably seen or something similar. It says, today is the kind of day that calls for a glass of wine the size of the entire bottle, and I don't even drink. So I think it's very common in the veterinary practice setting that we ourselves will make comments, you know, I'm going to go home and have a giant glass of wine, or, you know, I could use a glass of wine right now. Or if it's not wine that you fancy, maybe it's beer or a shot of tequila or whatever it might be. But we do often refer to alcohol as a coping strategy when we've had a really stressful day in the hospital. And I think this has been exacerbated by the pandemic. Certainly when most of us were in lockdown or have unfortunately had to quarantine, there have been lots of, you know, comments comments and posts on social media circulating. You know, for example, it's called quarantine coffee. It's just like normal coffee, but it has margarita in it and also has no coffee. You know, there's another meme with Baby Yoda that says, figure it out, if you have a drink in each hand, you can't touch your face. And then, of course, because most of individuals not working in the hospital have been working at home, they say, you know, can't get caught drinking on the job when you work from home. So lots of jokes and memes about drinking. And of course, it's not to say that we can't ever joke about drinking. I think that there's definitely humor to be had in a lot of these cartoons and memes and posts that are being shared. But it has really led me to question, are we referring to alcohol or using alcohol appropriately when it comes to discerning coping strategies versus self-care? So this is what led me into this month's topic. And I want to be clear that substance use in any form, whether it's, you know, marijuana, alcohol, other drugs, or whatever it might be, is absolutely a coping strategy and not a self-care strategy. So to say that we're going to go home and have a glass of wine and binge watch Netflix, that's okay in the short term because it's a short-term means of dealing with stress. It's usually done in reaction to something that has happened. So we had a bad day and therefore that's how we're going to cope. But unfortunately, these strategies are often not health promoting. So I just, you know, term the quote, often easy, but not always worth it. So you might not feel great the next day. You might not sleep well that night. You're certainly not doing anything for your physical health by lounging on the couch and drinking alcohol. So really important to recognize. And again, I'm not shaming anyone. It's not wrong. Been there, done that. We'll continue to do it on the days where I really can't muster up the strength to practice self-care that is going to be beneficial for me. But self-care, in contrast, is a long-term means of building up the reserves to handle stress so that when you have that really difficult day in the hospital, you can go home and still have the energy to go for a walk, connect with a friend, you know, pay your bills, or whatever self-care strategies that you have to do or need to do to promote your health and well-being. Self-care, for most intents and purposes, is proactive. We are doing it in anticipation of moving into difficulty. I just came off a month of shifts, my first time back in the hospital after a long hiatus with my maternity leave and with focusing on my wellness endeavors over the pandemic. And I knew leading into those shifts for those weekends that I would have to engage in a lot of self-care. So I made sure to prioritize time in nature, getting my finances in order, tidying up my environment, clearing clutter so that I was in a good headspace within my house, prepping healthy meals. You know, these things, they're not always fun and joyful. And I use the quote from someone, one of the instructors on Peloton, Jess Sims. She very often will say this, never easy, always worth it. And so she's usually referring to a workout, a tough workout. And I look at self-care the same way as well. Self-care generally is not easy. Who likes to, you know, call their counselor to book an appointment and sit and, you know, talk about their struggles for an hour? That's not easy, but is it worth it in the end? Absolutely. When it comes to promoting our health and well-being, you better believe it. So I want to just first highlight this important detail when it comes to substance use, just on a superficial level. But let's dig deeper into this. So I have to be honest, it's disappointing when we look at the literature to see how little substance use is actually researched among veterinary professionals. There are very few and far between studies and surveys that do this. This particular study that I'm going to be talking about here, psychosocial stress, demoralization, and the consumption of tobacco, alcohol, and medical drugs by veterinarians, was published back in 2009. So this is rather outdated, but I suspect that these patterns probably haven't changed. Now, what they looked at was high-risk alcohol consumption and the incidence of that. Now, they termed that as more than 10 grams per day consumption for women and more than 20 grams per day for men. So to put that in perspective, 10 grams of alcohol is about one 10-ounce can of beer, 3 ounces of wine, or about an ounce of hard alcohol or spirits. They also looked at binge drinking habits, and that's drinking more than five or more alcoholic beverages during a single occasion. And so this was a survey of more than 1,000 veterinarians in Europe, and believe it or not, one third of respondents, based on their responses to this survey, practice high-risk alcohol consumption that I just defined previously. Now, high-risk alcohol consumption was more common in women than men and more common in practice owners compared to practice employees. So again, that's women drinking more than 10 grams per day and men more than 20. Now, 22% of veterinarians surveyed also said that they engaged in binge drinking at least once during the previous month. So that's more than 5 drinks on one occasion. This was more common in men than women, and it was more common in individuals experiencing psychological distress versus those who were not experiencing psychological distress. So again, the numbers are pretty high. I would say that that's a fair number of individuals engaging in high-risk alcohol or binge drinking. Now, they also looked at drug use during the previous 30 days, and they asked specifically about drugs that were considered at risk for misuse. So these included tranquilizers or sedatives, appetite stimulants or suppressants, analgesics, and neuroleptics. And more than half of the veterinarians had taken a drug from one of those groups, and only 5% of the drugs that they took had actually been medically prescribed by a doctor. So I would venture to say that these medications or these drugs are being obtained either through black market, I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, from dealers, so to speak, or they are self-prescribing these medications, which of course is illegal. So very surprising. And I guess another way that they might have obtained these drugs might have been from a friend or a family member as well. So risk factors for regular medical drug intake included being a woman was a risk factor, being an employee rather than an employer in practice, intense psychosocial stress, and intermediate or high demoralization scores. And demoralization is basically dissatisfaction with yourself, lack of optimism, or lack of confidence. So the more that you felt that, the more at risk you were to engage in drug intake over the last 30 days. So all of this to say that, you know, this issue is an important issue, and it's more common than you think. Now, one of the most important reasons why I think it's important to talk about substance use, and honestly, I'm a little bit flabbergasted as to why I haven't spoken about this sooner, and so I'm glad that I've been prompted, you know, to do this now. There is definitely an association when we look at suicides and substance use. And there was a study that was published in 2019, so relatively recently, looking at suicides and deaths of undetermined intent among veterinary professionals taking place between 2003 and 2014. And what they found is that of the veterinarians who died, half of them had alcohol in their system, 42% had benzodiazepines in their system, and 13% had opioids in their system. And I can tell you that that is only of those who were tested for these substances. It was actually quite shocking how few of these individuals who had these undetermined deaths or suicides that weren't actually screened appropriately for toxins. And I would venture to guess that was probably a family decision. Maybe there was some shame or denial in terms of not wanting to recognize what might have been happening for some of these individuals. But all that to say, these numbers are likely very much underrepresented. Now, they also included veterinary technicians in that study as well, and 29% of technicians had alcohol in their system, 48% had benzodiazepines in their system, and none of them had opioids in their system. But again, that was confounded by the fact that many of these individuals were not tested for these substances. So I go back to what I have said a number of times now, that this is so important to talk about. And why is that? Well, the statistics would suggest that 40% of people seeking treatment for alcohol or substance use disorder will attempt suicide at least once in their life. And about half of individuals who die by suicide are intoxicated. And about 90% of individuals who die by suicide have a mental illness or substance use disorder or both. And for some studies, these statistics are even higher. So substance use disorder and suicide go hand in hand. And I really cannot stress this enough. We know that we have high suicide rates amongst veterinarians and technicians and other professionals based on research that has come out very recently. We know specifically, for example, that men are 2.1 more times as veterinarians to die by suicide compared to the general population, and female vets are 3.5 times more likely to die by suicide. And we need to talk about this more, because many of those individuals, the majority, are living with substance use disorder that is potentially not being treated or not being diagnosed. So let's dig into that a little bit more. So who is at risk of substance use disorder? Well, I'm here to tell you that it's anyone. Any person can be affected. There is no single cause that leads to a substance use disorder, just like any one of us is at risk of suicide. There are risk factors that put us more at risk, so to speak. So as with suicide, there can be a genetic predisposition, and there can be other risk factors as well for substance use disorders, such as psychological distress, physical illness, which of course can lead to substance use and then to substance misuse, and then social pressure. So depending on what circles you're socializing in and what their substance use behaviors are, that can put you at risk as well. So I want to highlight some of the warning signs of a substance use disorder. And I can share with you that I have worked with individuals who are living with substance use disorder or recovering from a substance use disorder or addiction. And there are some important things to watch for. And I'm going to be totally honest, these signs can go undetected for a very long period of time. So if you see this and you're questioning yourself, it warrants digging a little bit deeper. Listen to your intuition. If you are concerned for someone, please have a conversation with them. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So things to watch for include moodiness, withdrawal from relationships, changes in appearance, especially appearing more, unkept, so to speak, unexplained absences, abrupt changes in behavior. Again, if they are using a substance, especially a drug substance, then that could certainly adjust their behavior quite abruptly. Financial stress, or asking to borrow money, asking for advances on their paycheck, working late after closing. So very often volunteering, I'll stay late. And then of course being unattended in the hospital with access to substances. And then of course, any sort of discrepancies in the controlled drug log. So if you are watching this video or listening to this podcast and you're thinking to yourself, my goodness, I wonder for me, how might I know if I have a substance use disorder? And, I'll be honest, especially in the last few months with the pandemic and with veterinary practice being so demanding and so challenging, I've had a lot of very candid conversations with friends and colleagues of mine who have shared with me, I question whether my drinking may be too much. And so let's talk about drinking specifically right now. So there are screening tools for excessive drinking. And, you know, it's hard these days because I know many individuals aren't getting in to see their primary care physician. These are often questions that a primary care physician will ask during your annual screening. If they know that you drink alcohol or if you disclose that you drink alcohol, they're going to want to screen you to make sure that you are drinking alcohol that is not to excess. So question number one, have you ever felt you needed to cut down on your drinking? Question number two, have people annoyed you by criticizing your drinking? Question number three, have you ever felt guilty about drinking? And question number four, have you ever felt you needed a drink first thing in the morning, a so-called eye opener, to steady your nerves or get rid of a hangover? So this is known as the CAGE questions for alcohol use. So CAGE standing for cut down, annoyed, guilty, and eye opener. That's the acronym. Every time, for every question you answer yes, it's 1 point. So answering yes to two or more of these questions does raise suspicion about an alcohol use problem. Now, this doesn't diagnose you as having a substance use disorder, but it does raise suspicion and it warrants further contemplation and, and awareness and discussion. If you answered yes to none of the questions or only one of the questions, then you have a low probability of an alcohol use problem. So that's another tool that you can use, and you can find that tool online and do that on your own as well, or share it with someone else. Now, how do we actually define substance use disorder? What does this look like from, you know, a diagnostic standpoint? If you were to actually see a mental health professional, what are some things that they would be looking for? Well, I'm going to take you through 10 different points that are used to define substance use disorder by the diagnostic standards. And the first thing is that the substance is taken in larger amounts over a longer period of time than intended. So maybe you intended on having a drink, socially with your partner or with some friends, and it turned into a bender and you were drinking, you know, into the night and way more than you expected to, and that this has become a pattern. The second point is repeated unsuccessful efforts to control use. So you've tried to have dry days or off days or limit yourself, and that has not been successful. The third point is significant time spent in activities necessary to obtain the substance, use it, or recover from its effects. The next point is craving or having a strong desire or urge to use the substance. A recurrent use results in failure to fulfill obligations at work, school, or at home. So you're using this so much that it's actually impacting how you're functioning when you're not using the substance, or maybe you are using it, it's an impacting your work, school, or home life. The next point is continued usage despite social or interpersonal problems. So maybe every time you drink, you get into a fight with someone and you know that, gosh, perhaps I, you know, should cut back on my drinking, but you continue to drink. Social or occupational or recreational activities are eliminated or reduced because of substance use. So you used to, you know, do extracurriculars and you were on a team and you, went to the gym all the time, or, you know, you had a committee that you were a part of, and now suddenly that's not happening anymore and it's attributed to your substance use. The next point is recurrent use in physically hazardous situations. So of course, the biggest one that we would think of would be driving, substance use while driving. Continued use despite knowledge of having a physical or psychological problem caused or exacerbated by the substance. So for those of us who live with depression and or anxiety or other forms of mental illness, especially depending on the medication you might be taking, drinking or other substance use is very much contraindicated. So if you continue to use despite knowing that, that could indicate a problem. And then tolerance, which results in needing increased amounts of the substance to achieve the desired effect. So, you know, where you used to feel an effect after, one drink or one pill or whatever it might be, now it's you're noticing that you're having to take in more than that. So these 10 items are all pieces of the definition of a substance use disorder diagnosis. So what can we do as people, humans, we're all human. We have others in our lives, maybe not in the profession, who are recovering or currently living with substance use disorder, or ourselves or our colleagues or maybe our clients. How do we help someone? Well, the first thing is to accept the person as they are, right? This is a medical condition that they have. This is not who they are. And so we accept them as the people that they are with this substance use disorder. That means listening without judging them. That means not criticizing, expressing frustration, or confronting them in any way. It means giving reassurance that substance-related problems are common and they are nothing to be ashamed of, and that there is help available. So providing hope for individuals with substance use and normalizing it is really going to remove that shame and remove that isolation that is stigmatizing, and that's going to allow them really to seek help sooner than later. So there was a really great article written by Mary Berg in Today's Veterinary Nurse. This was published last year, and it's entitled Substance Use in the Workplace, What to Do? And there's really great information that's included in this column about how to handle it when you work with someone who potentially has a substance use disorder. One of the other things that I want to really make sure to highlight is watching our language. So the way that we talk about substance use can be really stigmatizing, similar to the way we talk about suicide. So you'll hear and you'll see in the media people talking about committing suicide. And of course, the committing implies that it's a crime, it's wrong, it's bad. And what happens then is when people hear that, if a person is having thoughts of suicide, or they have previously in their lives attempted suicide, this is very stigmatizing for them. They're not going to want to share that because it is going to be considered that they did something wrong per se. So same thing goes for people living with addiction. We want to avoid language like they are an addict or a user or an alcoholic or an abuser. First of all, they are not their addiction. They are a person who lives with addiction. So we would use language like this person has substance dependence, or they are misusing substances, or they live with a substance use disorder, or they live with addiction. Okay, so being very clear that we are not labeling these individuals by that. You can imagine too, if you're labeled an addict, how empowered do you feel to recover from your addiction? You feel like, well, I'm an addict, so I guess that's who I am. So why would I seek help? So again, not helpful when it comes to recovering. So a few other resources that I just want to touch on and share. I did write a blog at the beginning of August called When Do Coping Strategies Become Harmful for Veterinary Care Providers? And I really talk specifically about drinking habits and the way we talk about drinking amongst veterinary professionals and recognizing when you might have a problem with excessive drinking. And I recommended already that CAGE assessment. And so I urge you to consider that, taking that if you have not already contemplated those questions that I shared. And I just want to reiterate too what the Center for Disease Control, what the CDC recommends for alcohol intake for adults. So obviously the very best thing that you can do when it comes to alcohol is to abstain, to choose not to drink. But if you do drink, and that's okay, again, I don't want to, I guess I put a but in there, it should be more of an and. If you choose to drink, we just recommend that you drink in moderation. So what does that mean? That means less than or equal to 2 drinks per day for men and 1 drink per day for women. You also want to avoid heavy drinking, so not exceeding 15 drinks per week for men or 8 drinks per week for women. And then avoiding binge drinking, so that's 5 drinks on a single occasion for men or 4 drinks during a single occasion for women. Now, another drink sense or low risk drinking guideline that a lot of places and organizations are recommending is to have a dry day, at least one dry day a week, if not more. And a dry day is just a day during the week that you don't drink. It is exactly what it sounds like how some people do dry January. They'll do a whole month of not drinking. A dry day might be, you know, Monday is my dry day. I don't drink on Mondays, or whatever it might be. Again, physiologically, it makes sense. You're giving your liver a break. You're giving your body a break. You're going to sleep better. I mean, there's so many benefits, of course, to not drinking. And so this is just, it honestly, one of the biggest reasons why they recommend this is because having a dry day or days in your week prevents it from becoming a habit. So it prevents it from becoming a daily ritual that you do almost unconsciously that could then turn into a problem. So I do want to acknowledge that August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. So if you do know of someone who has overdosed, or if you feel called to post anything on August 31st to raise awareness for this important topic, the hashtag is #EndOverdose. You can visit overdoseday.com for information and resources. So I urge anyone who's listening or watching right now to please have a conversation about this. Share this episode with a friend, with a colleague, with a family member. Let's get the conversation going. We really don't talk about this nearly enough. So if we do anything to acknowledge August 31st, International Overdose Awareness Day, I really hope that we just open up a conversation and normalize talking about substance use disorders within our profession. So some other resources I'd like to share with you before ending. If you go to the AVMA website, they do have other well-being resources where they link to Alcoholics Anonymous and various other associations that help with substance use. There are also state well-being programs. So the different states offer different programs when it comes to recovery and support for individuals with substance use disorder. I really acknowledge, unfortunately, that this website has not been updated recently. So there are some programs that are not featured on here. The point is that wherever you are licensed, please check with your licensing body or your state regulatory board to see what resources they provide. I know here in Alberta, where I'm licensed, the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association will actually pay for a person's or much of a person's recovery program if they are living with substance use disorder. So really important to look into that. There's even some organizations like the Colorado Vet Med Association that have substance use prevention training that is mandatory. And this is fantastic. For me, again, this should be a part of veterinary school curriculum. And so really another resource that's worth taking advantage of. Vets for Vets is a tremendous resource sponsored by the VIN Foundation. This is confidential peer support for vet students and veterinarians. You do not have to be a VIN member to take advantage of this, and they have individual counselors available, some of whom do help or can put you in touch with resources to help with substance use. So please, if anything, consider reaching out. These are going to be individuals that are going to understand where you're coming from as a veterinary professional or a vet student, because they themselves are in the profession as well. And I also want to give a shout out to a new friend of mine and a colleague of mine, a fellow well-being advocate, Phil Richmond. Phil is just a tremendous human, and he is recovering also from substance use disorder. And Phil is very open about his journey. He has been featured on multiple podcasts talking about substance use disorder in the profession. He is one of the few veterinary professionals who really speaks openly about his path and what he's been through. And Phil and I actually just chatted yesterday, the day before recording this, and he told me, you know, if anyone needs support or help, he is very willing and able to be contacted and very happy to have a conversation and to get you to where you need to be to get help. So if you want to learn more about Phil, you can visit his website. He is the founder of Flourishing Phoenix, veterinary well-being and engagement consultants. Again, wonderful human, very happy to help. And this is one of the podcast episodes. It was a Cone of Shame podcast called called What Substance Use Disorder Recovery Can Teach Us About Overcoming COVID-19, where Dr. Andy Rourke actually interviews Phil Richmond talking about his journey with substance use disorder and the, you know, similarities between recovering from substance use disorder and overcoming the difficulties that we have all experienced with COVID-19. So fascinating conversation there. That is it for today's episode. I do want to just highlight some of the key takeaways. First and foremost, substance use is a coping strategy, not a form of self-care. High-risk alcohol and drug use, we know, are common among veterinary professionals. So we need to recognize that because we know that substance use disorders are also linked with suicide. And recognize that any person is at risk of developing a substance use disorder. That goes for you or anyone else in your life, in or outside of the veterinary profession. And there are certain signs that can indicate a substance use problem. So please watch for those and know that there are resources and supports available for you in helping someone who may have a substance use disorder, or for you or someone else to seek help if you are living with addiction. So that's it for this episode of Reviving Vet Med. I hope that you took away some tools and strategies for recognizing substance use disorder, either within yourself or within those who you work with or other people in your life. I hope that you will check out some of the resources that I shared. For a download of all of the resources shared in today's podcast, you can obviously consult the show notes, but you can also visit my website, mariehollowaychuk.com/substance, and there will be a download for you with all of those resources there as well. Please feel welcome to print those off or email them and share them with the people that you work with. If you do anything after you listen to this episode, I really urge you to have a conversation with someone in your life and talk about this. It's not something that we talk about enough. And so whether you feel comfortable to have a conversation or you just simply forward this episode on to someone else, I think that you could be making a real difference in someone's life. And if you can take time to subscribe to my podcast, I would really appreciate it. You're also welcome to leave a rating and review or share the podcast with someone else. And let's get more of these wellness episodes out there for those who are needing it so desperately right now in our profession. Before I go, I'd like to thank my podcasting superhero, Darby Rolfe, for producing this episode. And I would love to thank you, the listener, for tuning in once again. I hope you'll be here next month. And in the meantime, take care of yourself. Bye now.